ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। टुडे मॉर्निंग वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 24 एंटाइटल्ड मत्स्य द लॉर्ड्स फिश इनकार्नेशन टेक्स्ट 11 थ्रू 15। योऽसावस्मिन् महाकल्पे तनया स विवस्वत श्राद्धदेव इति ख्यातो मनुत्वे हरिणार्पित। किंग सत्यव्रत लेटर बिकेम द सन ऑफ विवस्वान द किंग ऑफ द सन प्लैनेट एंड वॉज नोन एज श्राद्धदेव। By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was given the post of Manu. The text doesn't have a purport. We'll keep reading the other text. One day, while King Satyavrat was performing austerities by offering water on the bank of the river Kritamala, a small fish appeared in the water in his palms. Satyavrat, the king of Dravida Desh, threw the fish into the water of the river along with the water in his palm, O King Parikshit, descendant of Bharat. With an appealing voice, the poor small fish said to King Satyavrat, who was very merciful, "My dear king, protector of the poor, why are you throwing me in the water of the river where there are other aquatics who can kill me? I am very much afraid of them." Purport. In the Matsya Puran, it is said, Ananta Shaktir Bhagavan, Matsya Rupi Janardana, Kridartham Yachayam Asa, Swayam Satyavratam Nripam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead possesses unlimited potency. Nonetheless, in his pastime in the form of a fish, he begged protection from King Satyavrat. We've been asked to read text 15 also, so we'll continue. To please himself, King Satyavrat, not knowing that the fish was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decided with great pleasure to give the fish protection. Purport, by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Here is an example of giving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even without knowledge. Such service is called Agyat Sukriti. King Satyavrat wanted to show his own mercy, not knowing that the fish was Lord Vishnu. By such unknowing devotional service, one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Service rendered to the Supreme Lord, knowingly or unknowingly, never goes in vain. So I'm feeling very humbled and grateful for this opportunity to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam today. I was thinking that like one of the advantages of speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is probably not mentioned in the Shastras, is that you have no choice but to stay awake in your own class. You cannot afford to sleep in your own class. So that's like a positive advantage, and I seek the blessings of, I pay my obeisances to all the senior devotees and seek their blessings to speak something. So this is like a very interesting episode that is happening in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Matsya incarnation, how Satyavrat Maharaj, he sees this small insignificant fish and decides that, you know, let me just help out, this fish is suffering. So let me just take this fish, you know, put it back in the water, let it survive. But then after a few verses, we'll see that seeing the behavior of the fish, Satyavrat Maharaj is going to smell that something fishy is happening here. You know, he takes a fish and it's too big for the small pond. So it removes the fish, puts him in the well, then fills up the well, then puts him in the river, fills up the river. And then removes and puts him in the ocean, fills up the ocean. So then he asks finally, like, who are you? You know, you are not ordinary. So, and the Lord like reveals to him and tells him that I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I've just taken incarnation to give you benediction. So this is like a very interesting theme, how we see that the Lord, if he wants to enter the heart, you know, wants to enter the life of a devotee, generally this is the strategy he generally uses. He enters the life of a devotee in an extremely insignificant way, and before you know it, you know, he completely overwhelms the life of the devotee. Like I remember a few years ago, you know, when we were very comfortably in absolutely no interest in spirituality, very comfortably and going towards hellish destination, one of our friends just casually asked us to accompany him to Radharas Bihariji temple in Juhu. And he got us a samosa. So I relished the samosa, but at that time I didn't realize that that samosa would be one of the costliest samosa I ever had in my life. You know, I mean, I had to pay a lot for it. You know, I had to give up my job, I had to give up my designer clothes, I had to give up my hair, and I'm still paying for it actually. You know, whatever hair is left, that's also like reducing day by day. So we see, and the best thing is that these are all external, like, you know, job and, you know, hair and all that, that's external. But the real payment is that day by day, the Lord is removing all the misconceptions that I have about myself and about the world around me. That is a real price I have to pay. And of course, I'm very excited about it because it's every day is like a new adventure. We don't know what the Lord is going to bring us. And similarly, like, you know, Murari Gupta Prabhu was just reminding me today morning about this story about how Sudama Prabhu and Radhesham Prabhu, many years ago, they were working together in the same office. And this is like the early 90s, you know, when there was a lot of car seva and Babri Masjid, that issue was going on. And Radhesham Prabhu was very sincerely practicing Krishna consciousness. And he was like, you know, like a Hare Krishna. And Sudama Prabhu, just to tease him, he was not a devotee then, just to tease him, would say, Jai Sri Ram, whenever he would see him, would say Jai Sri Ram. So one day Radhesham Prabhu thought that, oh, he's saying Jai Sri Ram, that means like, you know, he's inclined towards devotional service. So he just called him to the side and preached to him. And today thousands and thousands of devotees all over the world are doing Jai Sri Ram because Sudama Prabhu has become a devotee now. So at that time when Sudama Prabhu said Jai Sri Ram, he didn't realize that is, you know, he thought it's just an insignificant incident, you know, I'll just tease him and that's it, have some fun at his expense. But the joke's on him now. So basically this strategy, like, we can learn from the Lord, how when the Lord and definitely, like, if you look back on our lives, you know, when we first came across devotees or any aspect of devotional service, it was so, we none of us must have expected that, you know, things are going to just, we are going to become so serious about Krishna, or Krishna is going to become such a big part of our life. That's like a perennial strategy of the Lord, it looks like, to enter the life of a devotee. And this strategy we can also adopt, because anytime a new person comes to the temple, what really attracts him is what we can call the wow factor, wow. You know, just like we had that samosa and we went wow. So similarly, there are so many things in devotional service, and if somehow or the other that person comes in contact with that aspect of devotional service and goes wow, maybe not verbally, but within the heart. Let's say, you know, he comes to the temple and sees it's clean. Oh wow, it's so clean. You see the deities, wow, it's so nicely decorated. Wow, what nice kirtan, what nice singing. Devotees, wow, what a gentleman, what a refined lady, you know. If we can, if somehow or the other, infuse that wowness in any person that comes into, you know, contact with any aspect of devotional service, then it is ensured that he gets hooked. Because that is what this purport talks about, Agyat Sukriti. And Agyat Sukriti is nothing but you are somehow or the other able to appreciate some aspect of devotional service. Krishna, as we know in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord is so eager that, you know, he's feeling so much anxiety that, you know, why aren't people taking up Krishna consciousness? That's why he's always on the lookout. You know, who's going to appreciate my devotees? Who's appreciating devotional service? And the moment he notices that somebody is appreciated, wow, going wow within his heart, then he's hooked for life. There is no way that person is going to go away. Eventually, he'll just come around to taking up, making Krishna as the priority in his life. We also read the same factor which, you know, in one of the Bhaktivedanta purports, in the Mahabharata war, Arjuna is on the chariot and Krishna is on, you know, the charioteer in front. So all the villains in the Kuru army, when they are fighting, first of all they see, you know, the lotus-like face of Krishna. And in their hearts they go, wow, you know, this beauty is so extraordinary. And then Arjuna shoots his arrow. It's like a nice combination. He sees the beauty, gets distracted, and Arjuna kills him. So, and it's explained that because at the last moment they were appreciating Krishna's beauty on the battlefield, no matter what sinful activities they did, no matter even though they were fighting on the other side, because of this wow factor, because of this appreciation for Krishna, they all of them became liberated. So that is why it is very necessary that, you know, we as devotees who are already connected with the Krishna consciousness movement try to give this wow factor to every other person that comes into devotional service. That is a very easy way of, that is like a sure shot way of getting good results in preaching. In fact, this strategy should not only be used for, you know, just for newcomers. Even if we are practicing devotees for some, you know, for a few years, what happens is generally we see that new devotees make a lot of progress. They are very enthusiastic and they are very, you know, eager for devotional service, because if we analyze, this wow factor is tremendously present within their hearts, because everything is new for them. Oh, new dham, wow, what a dham, what a kirtan, you know, what a point in the class. But after you finish, you know, after you go through, say, 5 years, 10 years in devotional service, you have heard it all, you've seen the whole range, there is nothing more to offer. So what happens is this wow factor just reduces. In fact, it evaporates slowly without our knowing. And when this wow factor evaporates, that's when complacency sets in, that's when we take things for granted, and that's when devotional service becomes like a burden. So it is always necessary, from time to time, we try and, you know, inculcate this wow factor within our lives by very carefully practicing devotional service. So this theme about, you know, like insignificant incident turning into something really big and significant, that's like again and again repeated in the shastras. There were so many examples. While preparing, we were completely confused which exactly example to use. So I was just thinking about this Dhruva Maharaj incident, famous incident. Like Dhruva Maharaj was crying for the laptop, and Suniti just decided that, you know, just told him off, just get out, and if you want to take, you know, if you want to sit on the lap of your father, then you need to be born from my womb, simple as that, so get out. And Suniti didn't expect anything big, you know, like it's just a five-year-old, what do you expect a five-year-old to do? I mean, you chastise a five-year-old, he'll go sit in the corner, ball for some time, then he'll say, mama, like, bhook lag raha hai, like, you know, give me something to eat. But here in this case, I mean, she hardly explained. Of course, if you chastise somebody in America, then that kid might call the cops and report you for child abuse. That's a different matter. But like, if Suniti had absolutely no idea that her small incident of, you know, telling off her son, I mean, her stepson, might result in a big ecological imbalance of the universe, actually. You know, we are all talking about ecology. So how, like, just 6 months of austerity, and that austerity was so powerful, just sitting in one place, that he was able to just, just close down all the, you know, ventilation, and that heat was so great that even the demigods started suffering. And not only that, the small incident of just telling a small five-year-old child, like so many kids, you know, they run around in the temple and, you know, sometimes playfully they climb on the Vyasasana. So sometimes very tactfully you have to tell them, like, you know, please, you know, get off the Vyasasana, tell the kids or tell the parents. So like, you don't expect that, you know, the kid will take it in such a negative way that, you know, and a whole country will be created because of that. Impossible. But in this case, when Suniti, you know, ticked off her, you know, stepson, an entire new planet was created. You know, that is like the power of, you know, you can never judge, like an insignificant incident of telling a five-year-old boy to behave himself resulted in such big things. And what to speak about? This is just on a mundane level, the changes that happened. What to speak about spiritual level? You know, like when the man, you know, we hear that whenever any person in the family gets connected to Krishna and, you know, and receives Krishna's blessings, then Krishna takes, you know, has a special affection for all members in the family. So that way Sunithi also got that benefit. So similarly, we see that this strategy is not just used by the Lord, it is also used by the pure devotees to preach the message of Krishna consciousness and enter the hearts of the conditioned souls. We know how, you know, Prabhupada, we are very fortunate to be hearing the Leelamrita every day in the afternoon. And we see that how Prabhupada, he, you know, now right now he's an old man, and you know, he's just like this small fish, you know, and just like this Satyavrata Maharaj is thinking that let me do something for the fish. So similarly, we see all the devotees right now who are with Prabhupada, you know, they are saying, oh Prabhupada, oh Swamiji, not even Prabhupada, Swamiji, oh Swamiji is so old and Swamiji is so nice, let me give him a house. Swamiji is without a house, let me give him a house. Oh, Swamiji wants to do some kirtan, let me help him. Oh, Swamiji wants to print his magazines, let me do something. So they are thinking that, you know, like, they are getting transcendental knowledge from Swamiji, but at the same time, they have that feeling that, okay, let us also protect, you know, Swamiji from, in this big, bad world of New York. So they don't realize that, you know, who Swamiji is really. Prabhupada many times said that actually they didn't know who I was and what I've come to do. If they know that what I've come to do, then they would have killed me. Prabhupada said it on many occasions. In fact, this incident is there. Like, you know, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, before he was in Krishna consciousness, he was visiting one particular guru, like not really a, you know, devotee in the, you know, conventional sense, but a genuine person who had a lot of mystic knowledge, you know, knowledge about all kinds of mystic yogas and things. And he was teaching Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, you know, a lot of his techniques, mystic techniques. And one day Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj told this person that, you know, like, our relationship is very informal. I would like to formalize my relationship. I would like to accept you as my guru. This is before he became a devotee, Krishna conscious. So that person said, actually, I'm not your guru. If you want to know who your guru is, you know the Hare Krishnas? He said, yeah. You know, the spiritual master of the Hare Krishnas is your guru, he said. So Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was like, you know, mixture of shock and disappointment. He said, Hare Krishnas, those people who dance with bed sheets in the street, they. So he said, yes. Actually, this person, they call him Srila Prabhupada. He is the guru of all gurus. He's come here on a very, very special mission. And when I first saw him, when I first met him, because this person, like, because he was trained in mysticism, he was able to see subtle realities also. So he said that this person has such a strong spiritual aura, just by seeing it, I became scared and I had to run away. That kind of power that, you know, Prabhupada was emanating, and he was able to identify it. And he said at that time, in the West, there were a lot of other people who were, you know, gurus and, you know, spiritual leaders and people practicing mysticism. And he said, he claimed that all these people could actually identify Prabhupada's greatness and could identify that, you know, he is a very, very special person, come on a very special mission. And he, all of them should have helped Prabhupada in his mission. But somehow or the other, because they were, you know, we don't want to say what reason it is, but they were not in a position to help Prabhupada. So he said that when I saw you, I could immediately make out that you will be serving him. You can do a lot of service for him. And that is why whatever I have taught you, mysticism, it is only with the purpose that you will eventually use all these techniques in the service of Srila Prabhupada. So now this is our last meeting. You should not come and talk to me anymore, because if you take guidance from me, it is like I'll be offending Srila Prabhupada, because he is your real guru. So I cannot help you. So you have to go and take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. I mean, just as an aside, this person then later on went ahead, and in the 1990s, he took initiation from Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and his name, I think, is Nanda Maharaj Prabhu. Nanda Maharaj, yeah. So this is what it is like, you know, like Prabhupada, when he came in, he was so, it looked like, insignificant. Nobody was able to realize. But now, even in 1977, 108 temples also, people still perhaps didn't realize what is going to come. You know, how great Prabhupada is. Even now, so much has happened, still we won't realize how great. We have not fully realized how Prabhupada is great. Only later on, when historians, say after 300 years, 400 years, 500 years, when they chart the course of history, and they, you know, they list out what Prabhupada has done, then the entire magnitude, even now we don't realize. Only in the future, we will realize the entire magnitude of what a single person. This is like the, you know, no script writer could script such a story. Single person without any help is influencing generations and generations of devotees, generations and generations of people. Single most, you can say, influential person in the history of mankind. That's, and this person started off in an extremely insignificant way. Another thing about, like, you know, we can see how insignificant is, like, you know, one of the famous projects in Bombay in the 1970s, Veliparle, it is a jungle. You know, swamp infested, mosquitoes, and devotees at that time, they were living in, you know, in Malabar Hill. And when Prabhupada requested that you should be staying here, the devotees were shocked. Said, Prabhupada, you know, how can you do this? And like, see, one thing we have to understand, these people, you know, the devotees, even though they were in Western bodies, they were not ordinary. They were not like, perhaps like you and me, you know. They had that spirit. They had such immense love for Prabhupada, and they were very willing to do anything for Prabhupada. You know, just like if we just see this Radha Damodar party, we're making, you know, scores and scores of devotees simply by this combination of Vishnujan Maharaj and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Like Vishnujan Maharaj, they would park the bus in one place and Vishnujan Maharaj would start singing like a Gandharva, attracting all the hippies. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj would just stay on the sidelines just watching which hippie is taking the most interest in the kirtan. And then after the identifying that particular hippie, he would just call him to the side, take him inside the bus and start punching him. I mean, not physically, but philosophically. Give him, you know, tell him the, you know, the goal of life. And within minutes, that person, and mind you, this is not some, you know, Hindu, pious Hindu with who knows Krishna. This is all Americans, sinful, you know, what do you say, gallons and gallons of sinful activities off the street, never heard of Krishna ever before, and they are ready to shave off their heads. I mean, shave off the hair on their heads. And, you know, take up Krishna consciousness very sincerely. So this is the kind of power. Just imagine if you and me take a kartal and go to Chopati, you know, how many brahmacharis or how many devotees will we make? You know, if we just do that, like maybe from the Gamdevi police lockup, we'll have to call up Radhaditi Prabhu, like, please get me out of here. Like, you know, they have put me here. So at that time, this person, such a person, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, the great visionary, the person who had immense love for Prabhupada, who was willing to take extraordinary risks. Prabhupada said, you might as well go to China. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, fine, if you want me to go to China, I'll go to China. This person is telling Prabhupada in Juhu, Prabhupada, how can devotees stay here, Prabhupada? We need doorknobs. We need running water. We are Westerners. How can you expect this? Because they were not able to see, you know, what this project is going to happen in the future. And today, Radha Rasbihari on Sunday, 1 lakh visitors come. 1 lakh visitors on Sunday. And tens and thousands every day. In fact, like when we distribute books, we have not met even a single person who has not appreciated the Hare Rama Hare Krishna temple in Juhu. They always tell us that, you know, like, aapka mandir, you know, big temple you have in Juhu. Wow, what a temple, what a temple. And this is what we discussed earlier, wow factor. They come to Juhu, Radha Rasbihari ji, see the temple, see the opulence and go, wow. And they are all going to be devotees. You know, externally we might think that, oh, they are just eating the samosa and going. But you know what happened to a person who ate a samosa, like, you know. So you don't know what will manifest in the future. So similarly, it's like a, you know, it's this idea about, like, you know, making something big from an insignificant thing is not really a, not just restricted to spirituality. If you see, there is this idea called a venture capitalist, you know, in the mundane world. What is a venture capitalist? Is that this person has got loads and loads of money, and a person with just an idea it's in a very subtle form. He just has an idea and he approaches this venture capitalist that, you know, that this is the idea that I have. I have nothing. I have no background. I have no experience. I have no resources. I cannot, like, you know, manifest into reality. But if you pump in money, then this idea can manifest into reality. So when this venture capitalist sees this, he's got nothing. Like, you know, perhaps this idea, there is, you know, no precedent to this idea. It is just, you might say, you know, hawa mein, in the air. But still that person is willing, because even though this idea is very insignificant, it's born from a very insignificant person, this person has the faith, and by his experience, he knows that if I pump in millions of dollars into this idea right now, in a few years' time, I will be able to reap billions of dollars from this idea, you know, when this thing manifests. So seeing this, you know, so same thing, like insignificance, something very great and significant comes about. So similarly, just like that, as devotees, how do we realize that, you know, how do we decide now what is insignificant, what is significant? Because from what we see, if we just judge situations from a very mundane point of view, you know, if we trust our senses, then we will keep on making the same mistake. You know, whatever is significant, we will just dismiss it as being very insignificant. Like, for example, we were thinking, you know, just like this WADA project that is coming up now. You know, right now it looks very insignificant, like, you know, my God, so far from, you know, our temple, and, you know, so many things has to be done. There is no manpower, there is electricity shortage and perennial labor problem and so many things. But if we just pause for a moment and see, like, what's happening, like, historically, the world, the civilization that we are living in, which is based on greed, three things: greed, lust and petroleum. Okay, so greed and lust will always be there, but this petroleum is running down. And because petroleum is running down, what is going to happen is the civilization, it is tottering. And people are gradually understanding it, but they are not really talking openly about it, because petroleum is just like, you know, the soul is all pervading within the body. This petroleum is all so much all pervading within every aspect of our life, because we don't want to even think about a situation wherein if petrol runs out or it becomes exorbitantly costly, what is going to happen to our lives? Because it is so scary, this concept is so scary, not everybody is willing to really openly discuss that this is such a big problem. And we see that historically, you know, this is history, this is not like nothing, no Krishna, no spirituality, complete history, that any time in civilization, you know, if a society is pushed to the brink, you know, they have no option, they are completely helpless. And if another group comes and tells you that, look, I will give you solution for your problems, then that, you know, the society elevates that particular group to a higher pedestal and follows that group. Case in point is Hitler in World War I. After World War I, you know, Germany was completely defeated. It was one of the Axis powers. And what happened is German economy was so down. You know, when people used to feel cold, they used to burn, you know, Deutschmarks, the notes. It was so worthless that instead of paper, they would take Deutschmarks, their currency, and burn that. And at that time, Hitler, with his Nazi party, said that, look, I have the solution to bring back your glory. I know what to do. These, you know, and he said, like, pointed out other groups, these people are the problems, these people are the problems, and you just, you know, give me power, I will get back your glory. So similarly, when this world is tottering, you know, when this material civilization, as, like, you know, Prabhupada would always say, that civilization as we know it is doomed. 40 years ago he said, and sooner or later in our very lifetime we might see that if you know, we and society on the whole do not change the way we live, our attitude, we will see that happening. And at that time, what happens is that if the devotees are able to give them an alternative, here, take these farm communities, live like this, live simply, live more in harmony with nature, with God's will, then what happens is, just by seeing the example, there is no need of preaching. You know, if not millions, you know, if not hundreds of millions, at least, you know, lakhs, thousands and thousands of people without overt preaching will take up Krishna consciousness, because they know that this is the only alternative which is there. It is just like Prabhupada said, if Krishna wants, he can give you the world in 18 days. And it looks like Krishna is getting ready to give us the world. But are we ready for it? So that is why this, you know, projects like this, farm communities, you know, it is so deeply important. It just from a very historical point of view, like, you know, I mean, just from, if you see from that point of view, how important it is. So right now it's look very significant. What is this? There is so much to do, and, you know, but we have to see entire thing in perspective. How important it is. Maybe one of the most important things that, you know, the ISKCON Society has done for the planet Earth and the people of planet Earth. And not only that, if you just see from this point of view that, you know, such a deep lover of Krishna is putting so much energy and putting so much concern and, you know, is so much wanting that this project comes up, simply by seeing that, like, because see, a devotee, in one sense, he should be very simple, but at the same time, he should be extremely shrewd. Shrewd to get the mercy. Like Rupa Goswami says, what is the price you have to pay? Lolium. Lolium is greed. Greed to make spiritual progress. And how do you make spiritual progress? Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasad. Simply by pleasing the spiritual master, you make progress. So how do you please a spiritual master? You have to be very, very alert and see that, you know, what is the spiritual master's desire? Just get in line with that. And when you see that the spiritual master is emphasizing so much on this particular project or this particular aspect of living or something like that, it might be difficult for us. It might be something which we have never tried out before. It might be completely against our nature. But if we are really looking for something higher, if we are really looking for spiritual progress, then we should just change our desire and align our desires with that of the spiritual master or an advanced devotee of the Lord. So we don't realize it because it's a big sacrifice. It is, you're going against your paradigm. You're making, you know, completely trying out something which you have never tried out, which we have never tried out before. But simply by doing that, we don't know. It's just an insignificant, you know, step right now maybe. But we don't know what repercussions it has in the future. So just like Juhu was insignificant once upon a time, the place we are sitting here, Chowpatty, you know, in the 80s, you know, or perhaps in the early 90s also, within the ISKCON world also, Chowpatty, yeah, nice temple, but, you know, so many rats, you know, four-leg, two-leg, so many, you know, in the this thing. But now, no, you know, somehow or the other, like, we are also, like, devotees are loving us to be part of Chowpatty, but, you know, so Chowpatty is said to be worldwide. Devotees recognize it as a very extremely significant place, and which actually is so influential. It influences lot of things that happens on the planet. So similarly, right now, Juhu is insignificant, Chowpatty is insignificant. So similarly, right now, we might feel that, oh, this Wada project, oh, insignificant, why are, like, devotees going there and working hard and this, that and all. So I am very comfortable here. But we don't realize that from insignificance, just like this fish grew bigger, Matsya Avatar, this Wada project is going to be so huge, we will not be able to recognize it in a few years. So therefore, you know, we have to like see how we have to be very careful and not judge things on the external level. And if we just come, I mean, this is all like away from us. This is all like external reality we are speaking about. Another thing, you know, aspect of when we, you know, deal in devotional services about our consciousness, because the soul, the eternal, what do you say, the thing which is closest to the soul or the symptom of the soul is consciousness. It said, avinashi tu tadviddhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyayasyasya na kashchit kartum arhati. That this consciousness which the soul has can never be destroyed. Whereas the other coverings of the soul, the gross body, the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, they are all temporary. Just like this gross body, you know, we might be very proud of the body that we have, you know, we might be able to do so much physical activity and so much, you know, so many things we can get done with this body. But, you know, when this body is going to give away, there is absolutely no guarantee. You know, it is not a question of if the body is going to give away, it is just a question of when. Whatever activities we are doing so easily now, in just a moment's time, that same activity will be impossible to perform. So how can we rely on the body that we have? The mind has cheated us so many lifetimes. is still cheating us. We think of something, you know, and that same thing which we like repulses us after some time. So this mind is also so flickering. How can we trust the mind? Mind is so temporary. Intelligence, what intelligence do we have? Does it take too much to bewilder us? So many situations, you know, so many people, it is so easy to bewilder our intelligence, even though, like, you know, we are, you know, trying to follow the path of truth, still, intelligence is so weak and it is so bewildering and it just changes us. So how can you trust the intelligence? It is so temporary. And false ego, like Gauranga Prabhu was explaining to us in the farm recently, that, you know, all these upadhis that we have, oh, you know, I am this, I have this position, I am doing this. That's so temporary. All this thing can just change, you know, in the snap of a finger. So how can you trust that? So only thing that you can say is permanent is the consciousness of the soul. So generally what happens is that whatever is closest, and in one sense, consciousness is the thing that you can say that the soul really possesses. Because, you know, other things you don't possess, because if you really possessed it, you should be able to control it. We should be able to control it. You know, you can't control the body, you can't control the mind, you can't control the intelligence, you can't control the false ego. So whatever you have should be offered to Krishna. So similarly, that is bhakti basically. So this consciousness that we have, if we can just offer the highest, because right now when we are doing things, that we might be in a very external world, you know, even when we practice devotional service, you know, even our chanting and our service, everything must be really external. But how much, and right now our consciousness looks very insignificant. But the fact of the matter is, it is opposite. The consciousness is the most significant thing, and all the external activities that we do, that is, compared to the consciousness that we should offer to Krishna, that is insignificant. Like case in point, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, very famously, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, he is going to meet Mahaprabhu for the first time in Puri, and he's traveling from Varanasi. And at that time, one of the, you know, king's secretaries, he decides to accompany him, says that he also wants Mahaprabhu's darshan, Ramdas Vishwas. Now this Ramdas Vishwas, I mean, if you see the activities he was doing, it was like really bhav platform, you know, just chanting Ram's name continuously, you know, chanting 24 hours, so much service attitude. He didn't allow Raghunath Bhatta Goswami to carry his own luggage. And Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was getting embarrassed, like, no, please, I'll carry it. No, please. Just by serving you, I'm getting so much joy, you know, please. I'll carry this baggage for you, chanting Lord's name. When Raghunath Bhatta Goswami would sleep, Ramdas would not sleep. You know, he would be just massaging the, you know, lotus feet of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. No, you sleep. Just by, you know, giving you so much pleasure, I'm getting joy by that. You know, I was thinking that just by reading the character of Ramdas Vishwas, like, if perhaps if he was in Chopardi, they might have made him the ad hoc service in charge or something like that. And I'm seeing his, you know, external, all these activities or something like that. But when they reached Mahaprabhu gave Raghunath Bhatta Goswami a lot of attention and a lot of affection and a lot of love. But he completely ignored Ramdas Vishwas. Mind you, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's activities externally, it's not mentioned that he was constantly chanting or, you know, he was doing these things. But it is specifically mentioned that Ramdas Vishwas was doing a lot of activities externally. And Mahaprabhu didn't do it because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that Mahaprabhu didn't give him any shelter or affection because he was seeing that how Ramdas Vishwas wanted to merge with the Lord. He didn't want to serve the Lord, he wanted to merge with the Lord. And similarly, if we just see this pastime, we can just probably dismiss it saying that, oh, at least we don't have that desire, you know, to merge with the Lord, to become one with the Lord. But if you really analyze what is this merging with the Lord, it is basically wanting to become equal to the Lord. What is the meaning of becoming equal to the Lord? Wanting to become and enjoy like the Lord. What is the meaning of becoming enjoyed like the Lord? Wanting to become the center of attraction like the Lord. Only the Supreme Lord should be the center of attraction. But the moment we want to put ourselves in the center, then that means we want to become one with the Lord. So we might be doing so many activities in Krishna consciousness, running around, so much service, and, you know, so many, you know, hearing, chanting, hearing lectures, reading books, so many things we must be doing. We are doing. But where is our consciousness? It is a very, very important matter. Sometimes we might just what do you say, get into this mood that, you know, right now the institution needs my, you know, needs my services, needs my external activities, needs my mind, needs my intelligence. My elevating of consciousness, that aspect can wait actually. But this is an emergency, so many things require to be done. So let me just get that, you know, done. And later on, I will just concentrate on elevating my consciousness. You know, thinking that this, you know, all these external activities, you know, which we do with the body, with the mind, with our intelligence, that is significant. And this consciousness elevation, that will happen eventually. Like, you know, that's not so significant now. But again, the opposite is true. The elevation of consciousness is important in the long run. Without that, if whatever activities we are doing right now, you know, whatever hearing, whatever chanting, whatever physical services we are doing, if it is not, you know, if it is not done with the purpose of elevating our consciousness to Krishna consciousness, if you're not feeling the deep attachment for Krishna and Krishna's devotees, then we will be in trouble. So, like, I mean, we've spoken so much about consciousness and things, and also somebody might raise his or her hand and say that, you know, son, you today morning you're speaking so many big things about consciousness and this and that and all. So what about your own consciousness? You know, we see that it's one of the most degraded in our community. So what are you doing about that? You're speaking so many big things, but what are you doing about your own consciousness? So I must admit, if somebody makes some allegation like that, I cannot defend myself, but I can only humbly say that just by speaking this, you know, it's not just I'm just speaking to you, I'm speaking to myself. I'm the first recipient of this, you know, whatever knowledge has come out. So just by simply speaking this, and just by your blessings and prayers, we can also, you know, gradually elevate our consciousness. So time is up. We would like to end here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.